5
4
3 2
1
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. I'm Stephen Scott and this is the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Wherever you are in the world, however you choose to listen to us, be it on air, be it online, be it as a podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to me and indeed us here at Tech Talk. Now, Tim and Sean unfortunately aren't with us today. They are on a well-deserved break, but it's me with you, guiding you through some of the big stories of 2017. And what a year it has been. I mean, really, truly, honestly, it has been quite a year for technology. I mean, it's the year when I would say more technology companies have got on board the accessibility bus and are taking it all the way to Happy Town, which is good news for us as blind people. Anyway, lots to get through over the course of the next hour, and we're going to be talking about Amazon, a big company, of course, that's made huge strides in the world of accessibility. Very excited to talk about them. Also, we are going to be hearing some of your contributions over the past year, which we are so thankful for. We really do thank you for taking the time to not just email in or call in, as a lot of you do, but also for taking the time to record as well and send in some audio clips. We'll hear some of your contributions from the year as well. And I'm going to play you... Yeah, thanks for the drum roll. Yeah, that's good. I'm going to play you the most popular podcast of 2017, our most downloaded feature from the Tech Talk podcast. It might not be what you expect, and we're going to play it for you in full here once again on the program, because I think it's a product that, although a lot of people have downloaded and listened to it, I think there's still a lot of people who are unaware of its existence. So a really interesting piece of tech, not what you will think. I guarantee you, you'll think it might be Apple-related or Android-related or even Amazon-related. It's not. No, none of those things. I'll play you the most popular feature that we've ever had on this program this year. That is coming up. But we kick things off with what's maybe not too surprising a topic, and that is, of course, 10 years of the iPhone. It was 10 years this year that Steve Jobs stood on that stage and announced the iPhone to the world.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything. Three things: a widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
So I'm going to tell you a story about when I first got my iPhone. It was shortly after the 3GS had been released. A friend of mine that I work with had gotten one and was using it and kept raving about how VoiceOver was so great, and he was able to use all these different apps, and he was able to play some games and access the internet and all these different things he could do on the phone, which is a flat piece of glass. And I was coming from the Nokia N82? Was that the one, I think, that was compatible with the Tox software to have it speak? And I had bought it used off eBay because they were just so expensive. And I just wasn't sure about making that switch. I wasn't sure about being able to use, again, that flat piece of glass and being able to navigate all these different things. I mean, on my Nokia, I could do email, I believe, and I think some basic internet, and of course make phone calls and text message, but I think that was about it.
I was quite late, I guess, to the iPhone party. I know that VoiceOver was launched 2 years later, so that came along during 2009, and I think at some point during 2010 was the first time I'd experienced an iPhone from a VI user. It was actually someone I was learning Braille with, my tutor. Got one, she brought one in and showed how this works. And at the time I thought, yeah, all right, it's good. It had Siri, and to me it just seemed a bit gimmicky. And I just thought, no, I'm going to hold off from this. I'm quite happy with my talks on my Nokia. and I'll make do with that for now. And then I realised that everybody in the VR community was switching and raving about how this touchscreen phone was the answer to all our prayers. I bit the bullet and I think I ended up, I think I had an iPhone, I don't know, 5 years now. iPhone 4S, I think, was probably my first. I can't remember now, but I think it's about 5 years, and I haven't really looked back and think that's fantastic.
So I've been enjoying iPhones since the end of 2009. It's been a bit expensive, but it's been great. It's been fun. It's been well worth it. I'm very grateful. Very grateful for the iPhone.
Wow, 10 years of the iPhone, and great to hear your stories as well. That was what it was really all about, a chance to hear what you had to say on the topic. Thank you so much for your contributions to that. Now, of course, Amazon made a lot of headlines this year for a whole range of different products, but in Blind World, for one particular news story.
This is Tech Talk.
Breaking news.
Amazon Prime Video and the content you can stream online from Amazon. For a long time, there was no audio description on it, and it's something we've talked about and talked about and talked about. They've clearly been listening to us, guys, because this week they've announced support for audio description.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. Brilliant. You know, this
Isn't
has
it?
Been long overdue. They've had to do something, really, because they've had to compete with Netflix and things like that. So I think it's brilliant. Long overdue.
Yeah, we couldn't believe it here at Tech Talk. Yeah, Amazon finally, after us talking about it for almost a year, they finally announced audio description on Amazon Prime Video, which is great news. And although it's been a bit of a slow process getting it rolled out and making it available, it is definitely getting somewhere, and that is brilliant news. It was also the year when we started taking their Fire tablet series a bit more seriously. The latest one, the HD8, which is out right now, and it's one of the cheapest tablets around in terms of quality, in terms of what it's capable of. It also is fully accessible, and I reviewed it for Tech Talk. Oh, it's all right, guys. It's fine. It's just I opened my wallet there to spend more money, this time on an Amazon Fire HD tablet. And I thought I'd put it through its paces for you here on Tech Talk.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Okay, so I'm holding the device now in front of me. I have it in a vertical position, so it's like I'm holding a book. And if I go to the very top, I should feel some buttons there, and that means it's the right way up. And it's kind of the only way you would know that it is the right way up. So if the buttons on the device are at the top, then you're holding it the right way. Now, on the top, from left to right, you've got a headphone port, which just takes your standard 3.5mm jack. No lightning ports here. Good old-fashioned 3.5mm headphone jack, perfect for all your standard headphones. And, of course, the little microphones as well. If you want to use it for Skype calls or anything like that, it would work with that. Going along a bit, you've got another button, which is quite a long button. I think there's a groove in the middle, but I can't really tell with my fat fingers. But basically, you've got an up and down button there for volume. Moving along, you then have nearer the right-hand side, you've got a micro USB port. That is where you charge the device. And there's a power button to switch on and off. Down the left-hand side, you've got two speakers, one at the top from where the device is at the moment, and then one at the bottom. That signifies that the speakers are there, so you would know which way you're holding the device when you're watching it, say, in landscape mode. On the right-hand side, probably my favourite feature of this and any other Android device that you find, micro SD card slots, which means that you can take the very basic storage and increase it by up to 128 gig. And you can do that so cheaply. You know, so if you think about the Apple equivalent, that would probably cost you a good few hundred pounds more. Whereas you can pick up micro SD cards for next to nothing on Amazon or anywhere else. Fire. Now, the first thing you're going to want to do when you get your Amazon Fire tablet is get accessibility turned on. It's got a range of options. It's got voice view, and it's got its own magnifier, which is a way of increasing the size of the screen so that you can get right in close to the apps if you prefer to do that. Magnifiers on these devices tend to be a bit fiddly, and if you've got some partial sight, you might want to have a look at it and try it out. Obviously, that's not something we can do very well on the radio, so instead we're going to play with voice view. First thing you need to do is find the settings app, which means finding the icons on the screen or the apps on the screen.
Video, row 1, column 3.
And using two fingers, swipe up. That'll take you to page 2 of the apps. Now let's find settings.
iPhoto in my videos calculator. Settings.
Double tap.
Settings. Wireless.
Okay, so that's me into the settings. I can now swipe through to look for accessibility. I bet it's near the bottom.
Storage, power, apps and device, personal, my account, profile, parental, security, sound, keyboard and system, sync, help, accessibility.
What did I tell you? It's always at the bottom. Right, double tap.
Accessibility, voice view screen reader.
Now while we're here, let's have a look at some of the other accessibility options it offers. I mentioned magnifier.
Screen magnifier is off. Enables the use of gestures to magnify the screen.
You've also got
font size, normal.
I've left it at normal because I'm not going to use the screen.
High contrast text is off.
Makes the screen just that little bit clearer, the font's a little bit sharper, the darker's darker, etc.
Color inversion is off. May affect performance.
Unless you invert the colours of the screen if you prefer it the other way around, if that makes it easier for you, but it does say it will affect performance, like watching videos.
Colour correction, off, 7 of 15.
Ideal for someone like me who's got colour blindness.
Hearing settings, 8 of 15. Subtitles is off.
That's self-explanatory.
Convert stereo to mono is off.
Good if you'll never use one earbud as well. That's a great setting if you're partially sighted, and I do that a lot. I often just wear one earbud.
Accessibility help. Accessibility user's guide.
So that's an overview of the accessibility features that are in the device. If you want to turn on Voice View, then it's simple enough. Mine's is turned on already, obviously. All you would do is go to Voice View and double tap, and it's on. And there is a user's guide in there as well, so you can learn how to use it if you want to get into more depth and detail. Fire. Okay, so I've already set my device up, so first thing we want to do is find the unlock button. So take your finger to the bottom of the device, remember, it has to be in vertical mode, and root around for the unlock button.
View more after she's unlock button.
There it is, double tap.
Device unlocked, home, 2 of 10.
And that puts us right into the home screen. So all your apps are here. You've also got a navigation bar which gives you access to the following.
Books, video, games, shop.
And to get to that, all you do is get your finger onto where it says home and then swipe left and right to go through that navigation menu. Also on the screen are your apps.
7 rows, 5 columns, Silk Browser, App Store, video.
Those are your Amazon apps, and you'll get other ones on there like Kindle and also music. So let's say we want to read a book. Let's find the Kindle app.
Books.
Double tap.
Books. Killer Justice, Legal Thriller, Brad Williams Book 2, Grayson, Joshua. Book downloaded. Reading is 36% completed. Book.
So that book is one I'm reading at the moment. If I want to continue reading that book, all I do is double tap on it.
I Hate the Career Criminals.
That drops me onto the page I was at before. And to continue reading, all I do is swipe two fingers from the top of the screen down.
I Hate the Career Criminals. I hate the people that have been doing crime for as long as they have lived and will continue to commit crime until their dying days. Generally, their dying days are...
And that's all you do to read a book. It's as simple as that. And Kindle books on the Amazon Fire tablet are really accessible, really works well. You've also got large print options as well if you can see the screen. But if you want to listen through VoiceView, well, that's how you do it. Okay, so what about other ways to enjoy entertainment? What about Netflix, for example? Could we enjoy a TV show with audio description on this? Fire. So to get to the menu, all you do is go to the bottom of the screen and you'll find three buttons.
Back button, home button, app switcher button.
We want the home button.
Home button.
Double tap.
7 rows. 5 columns, books.
Now, my Netflix app, I know, is on the second page of apps, so what I have to do in that case is to swipe up with two fingers to get to the next page. You'll hear a click to confirm that. There it is, quite a small click. Now I'm going to find Netflix.
Maps, calculate, photo, fire for kids, Netflix.
Again, double tap.
Navigate up button.
So I'm in Netflix, so let me scroll around and see what's there.
Grace and my list. Designated Survivor button.
Oh, I like that one. Right, double tap in.
Designated Survivor.
Now, once I'm in here, all I have to do is go back and forward, left and right with my finger, or scroll up and down.
Search. Designated Survivor, 2017, 12-1 season. Play video Designated Survivor button.
Double tap.
Play. Land. Dot. Navigate up button.
White background, then turn red. Netflix. Words appear. A Netflix original series.
Previously on Designated Survivor.
I don't understand. Where was I?
Well, that's my question, Congressman.
So is there a reason that you're asking all these questions? Have I done something wrong?
You were supposed to get a statement.
Play slash pause. But
who is this?
Okay, we'll stop that for a second. Just a quick note, when you watch something on, say, Netflix, it will turn your device into landscape mode. So to get to the menu items, you need to turn the device around. Now, I've got audio description on by default, but if you want to get to it, you've got to be quite quick. So you've got to double tap on the screen and get your finger to the top right of the screen very quickly to find the change language button.
Change subtitle and slash or audio.
Double tap.
Audio, subtitles.
Scroll down to find audio description.
English, audio description, 6 of 6.
Once you've got it, double tap on it. And that's it. Your programs from now on will have audio description.
Fire!
And that's the Amazon Fire tablet. Cheap, easy to use and accessible. What more could you want in such a small package? The Kindle Fire 8-inch HD. It's well worth a look, or even a listen. The Amazon Fire tablet there, and what a device it is. If you get one for Christmas, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Your voice could be on this show coming soon. Yeah, fantastic. Well, staying with Amazon for one more story, and it was our Tim Schwartz who picked up on this one, because in the States, they got this feature first. It's now available in the UK as well. It allows Amazon Echo Dots or Echo devices to call each other and have a bit of a conversation, but also not just that, send messages to each other. And Tim gave us a bit of a demonstration.
If you've ever wanted to use your Amazon Echo or the Alexa app to send a text message,
compose message button. Cabbage. Cabbage. E. E. L. 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 O. O. Hello. Send message. Button.
Place a phone call.
Echo. Call Jennifer.
Okay. Jennifer Schwartz.
Send a voice message.
Echo. Send a message to Jennifer.
What's the message?
Hello, sweetheart. How are you?
Sending to Jennifer Schwartz from Tim Schwartz.
Or receive a phone call.
Jennifer Schwartz would like to talk. It's Jennifer Schwartz.
Echo. Answer. Hello, my dear.
Hello, how are you, my dear?
I am good.
Then the newest updates to the Amazon Echo and the Alexa app are just what you've been waiting for. That's right. Amazon has updated the Alexa app as well as the Amazon Echo with an all-new communications tab that allows you to send and receive text messages, voice messages, and phone calls. You can access all of these new features from either the Amazon Echo device itself or by using the Alexa app on your iPhone. The only exception to this is sending text messages. If you try to use the Amazon Echo itself to send a text message, this is what happens.
Echo, send a text message.
I can send a voice message. Try Alexa, send a message.
When you type or dictate a text message to your friend using the Alexa app, they will receive an alert on their phone with the app as well as on their Amazon Echo that you've sent them a message. This also works with voice messages and the phone calling system, as you heard at the beginning of this demonstration. When you first get the update and open the app, you'll be prompted immediately with the new communications setup. So it's going to walk you through that process, which I won't show you today because it's a fairly simple process, but they will ask you to verify your name as you want it listed for other contacts to see, and they will ask you for your phone number. That's something to keep in mind with this is that it does only utilize your phone number to share with contacts, not an email address. So if you want to be able to use these features with other Echo users, you will have to have their phone number. It will not access their email address, at least not at this time.
So a big year for Amazon for sure, and I wonder what they'll come up with in 2018. We'll just have to wait and see. Now, one big story from 2017 for sure was cyber attacks. It's something we're all aware of, I guess. We've heard about it. But it's often felt a little bit sci-fi. Although in 2017, when it hit the NHS in the UK, it became very real. And we gave you a bit of a report on the topic to make people understand what it all means. Think of a computer virus like the flu. Once someone has it, it starts to spread through contact with other people, and so it goes on. Well, with computers, a virus is a type of malicious code or program written to alter the way a computer operates and is designed to spread from one computer to another, just like the flu. So what was the massive cyber attack that hit the world, and how does it work? Well, for a while now, hackers have been spreading what's called ransomware, called WannaCry. It's often delivered by email, which tricks you into opening attachments and releasing malware onto your system in a technique that's known as phishing. Once your computer's been affected, it locks up the files and encrypts them in a way that means you cannot access them anymore. In order to regain access, the hackers demand payment. What's worse is that security experts warn there is no guarantee that access will be granted after payment. Some ransomware that encrypts files ups the stakes after a few days, demanding more money and threatening to delete the files altogether. WannaCry exploits a vulnerability in Microsoft, which released a patch to fix it back in March. However, people don't always install updates and patches on their computers, and so this means vulnerabilities can remain open a lot longer and make things easier for hackers to get in. With advanced antivirus software, it is possible to remove the virus from a computer. It can also be done manually by putting a computer into safe mode and manually removing the infected files. However, prevention remains the best form of defence.
Hopefully IT departments will be able to roll out to their staff and say, you know, this is why it happened, or even just the very basics, and said, don't be clicking on stuff that you don't recognise, and hopefully containing potential further outbreaks.
That's IT security expert Dan Raywood there. Europe's crime-fighting agency Europol says the wave of cyber attacks, which includes hacks on the NHS, were on an unprecedented scale. It says there have been 200,000 victims in at least 150 countries. In the UK, hospitals and doctors' surgeries in parts of England were forced to turn away patients and cancel appointments after they were infected with the ransomware, which scrambled the data on their computers and demanded payments of between £300 and £600 to restore access. People in affected areas were being advised to seek medical care only in emergencies. NHS Digital says it's received no reports patient data has been compromised. However, that was little comfort to Richard Waring from Runcorn in Cheshire, who went to hospital complaining of chest pains.
Within an hour, I was seen by a nurse, and they basically explained that they had to go through a series of questions. That then meant that I had to wait to see a doctor, and I was informed that the doctors were having to follow patients from point A to point B, x-rays, etc.
However, Emma and Andrew Ewart, who have a relative in Monklands General in North Lanarkshire, says the care hasn't been affected.
One of the nurses said to me that the older nurses just get back to what they did a few years ago. The newer ones are a bit flummoxed.
That's right.
But yeah, they seem to be taking
it. Seems to be taking all right.
It's not just health services that were targeted. Production at Nissan's plant in Sunderland was also halted following the breach. Peter Warren from the Cybersecurity Research Institute says that's what happens when security isn't taken seriously.
A lot of things that people have been saying about this are, oh, these machines haven't been updated. And no, they haven't. These obsolete operating systems are still being used across the government. But there's also not very, very good training.
Some experts are describing it as the biggest attack of its kind ever recorded. Russia, Ukraine and Taiwan were the top targets around the world, with the Interior Ministry in Moscow confirming it was struck. Leading international shipper FedEx Corporation was another high-profile victim, while in Spain, telecommunications company Telefonica was among many targets in the country. Portugal Telecom and Telefonica Argentina both said they were also targeted. In Germany, railway operator Deutsche Bahn was a high-profile target, with screens at stations showing the ransomware message. One researcher who helped stop the spread says despite the extent of the attack, it all seemed a little amateurish.
I was a little surprised it wasn't as sophisticated as I expected. I was expecting proper professional grade code, but it sort of seemed like your sort of thing that like someone had put together in their free time.
In amongst all of this, a hacker told Sky News he was able to get into an NHS hospital's computers in less than an hour and access anything on the server. The teenager, who wants to remain anonymous, says he managed to access an NHS website 3 months ago. But he's told our correspondent, Joe Tidy, he offered help rather than making demands.
I think it's extremely dangerous what they've done. I mean, people's lives are literally at risk.
It's not something you'd think of doing then?
No, I definitely wouldn't go this low. I mean, it's just sad, really.
So who was behind the attack? Reports claim a cyber gang called Shadow Brokers is being blamed for the hack. The mysterious organisation said back in April it had stolen a cyber weapon from the National Security Agency, America's powerful military intelligence unit. So how can we protect ourselves from now on? Should we buy antivirus software immediately? Our security expert, known only as Kayaker, says hang fire.
I personally today would not recommend any third-party antivirus or security software other than the Microsoft Defender with the current version of Windows. And the reason for that is, A, it does take up a lot of resources. B, it tends to be reactive. So if there's a new threat out there, it's not going to prevent it. It only prevents known threats. And the last one is, the things that the antivirus software is allowed to do, looking into your traffic, checking files out, is exactly the type of thing that a bad guy is going to want to do. So it makes a very interesting attack vector. And I think I saw some report, and I wish I had the resource for this, but it was basically a study saying that there were security flaws in the actual antivirus software. And if that were to go down, and somewhere to compromise your antivirus software, then, you know, all bets are off. They have exactly what they need to do. So it's just another, what we call an attack vector for third parties, bad guys, to attack you with.
Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
2017 brought with it a whole host of challenges, like most years for blind and partially sighted people, but some of them were helped by a new app from Microsoft. Now, initially in the States, Seeing AI was launched, and it proved very popular with our listener, Kayaker.
This is a new project from Microsoft designed to give blind and visually impaired people a taste of their environment in various forms. It's almost like a Swiss Army knife of apps. It's got a little bit of KNFB, a little bit of talking goggles, a little bit of facial recognition, and scene recognition. It's kind of cool. The way the app works is that you launch it, and you basically have five modes to choose from. They are short text, which you'd want to use just looking around for short pieces of text, perhaps on a box or a sign or something like that. There's a document mode, which allows you to take a picture much like you would with an OCR program. And that's designed for, you know, letters or things that are on print, books, etc. Next, there is a product mode, which integrates barcode scanning to database lookup recognition. And what's unique about this feature is that it uses proximity alert to give you an indication of where it thinks the barcode is, and it gives you audible signals as you get closer to the barcode. It actually helps you find the barcode on the object that you're looking for. Next, there is a person mode, which identifies faces in a picture or live video stream. And what's unique about this feature is that you can also program people that you know. If you take three pictures of a person, or let them take three pictures of themselves via selfies, you can name it. So instead of just saying face 5 feet away, it might say Sean 5 feet away. And the last feature is a beta feature, and that's the scene feature, where you can take a picture and it will do its best to describe or try to figure out what is in the picture. So let's jump right into it and take a look. First up, we have the short text feature. And I'm going to try to use three tests on this. I have three bags of coffee that's an uneven surface and kind of uneven and not flat. And I'm going to see if we can distinguish between the coconut-flavored coffee, the hazelnut-flavored coffee, and the dark roast-flavored coffee. So here we go.
Seeing AI, active. Channel, short text, adjustable.
Short text. Cocoa. Coconut flavored. Roasted up. Coconut. Roasted 2. Coffee. Cupcake. Roasted. Coffee. Cupcake. / PO. Abbey. New baker. This flavored Esther. Caramel undertone. It's reminiscent of. New York bakery. Shipping to deliver. Dairy. D-A-R. D-A-R.
Now, although it never gave me the exact text of everything that was on the bag, I probably could have tuned it in a little bit, but it gave me enough information if I knew what it was to figure out the difference between the coconut, the hazelnut, and the dark roast. So I call that pretty much a success.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you there, Kayaka, because, you know, if people want to listen to your whole story, I'm sure they will on the podcast. What I will say is the app is now available in the UK, and it's had some amazing updates, including handwriting recognition, currency detection, colour detectors as well. It's all built into the app, and it's completely free. It's only for iPhones. Hopefully it will roll out to Android, but Microsoft have no word on that yet. But certainly an app to download for sure if you have an iPhone. If you got one for Christmas, definitely download that app. What a suite of tools to have in your arsenal. And like I say, completely free. Brilliant. Now, to another product which came out this year. A bit of a mixed review, it's fair to say. Different people had different views on this one. But interestingly, in the last few months, we've had emails all saying positive things about RNIB in your pocket.
Hi there. I am RNIB in your pocket, powered by Real Sam, your accessible media device from RNIB and Real Thing. My friends call me Sam, and I can read you a large number of newspapers. I can also tell you the weather and the time anywhere in the world, as well as the street address and nearest cross street to where we are located. You can also ask me for radio program podcasts on demand, at the time you want to listen.
Yes, the future is here. RNIB in your pocket is the latest product to be launched by the UK Sight Loss Charity. But what is it?
It's a Samsung media player, has O2 connectivity and interactive speech software from RealSam, all packaged together with a subscription to RNIB Library and RNIB News Agent.
That's Anna Dearden from RNIB there. So how did all this come about, Anna?
So RNIB in your pocket became a reality from a partnership that we've been working on with Real Thing, who have developed the RealSam speech software, and a relationship with O2, who will be providing the connectivity and the ability for the Samsung media player to carry all this off and actually offer people easier access to RNIB's library and newsagent content.
Okay, so you get access to RNIB talking books. What does that mean? Well, in reality, you have access to around 25,000 books. Plus, the price includes a subscription to RNIB Newsagent, which gives you easy access to the daily papers and also a wide range of magazine titles. In addition to that, you can find Project Gutenberg on there, which gives you access to around 53,000 more books, read to you in a synthetic voice rather than in a real voice. And if that's not enough, you can listen to podcasts as well, like ours at RNIB, plus favourites from the BBC and others. But who's going to buy it?
The product is aimed at people who want access to that content immediately. So anybody who perhaps at the moment doesn't have access to a smartphone or tablet to be able to download or stream that content themselves immediately, this device gives easy access at the touch of a button and is voice controlled, to give people access to the library book or the magazine or the newspaper that they want immediately and not having to wait for either that to be delivered or to be made accessible in a format for them.
Sounds good. And yes, you heard right, it's voice controlled, which means no fiddling with small screens or having to master a touchscreen device. To make it work, all you do is push a button at the bottom of the device and talk to it, like this.
Read me the business section of The Guardian.
This is The Guardian from today. There are 6 unread articles in the business section. Headlines 1. Bailey bows to...
Find articles about Theresa May.
Okay, searching for articles about Theresa May. The first page of 13 unread headlines from the search results section 1. Warning on climate.
Number 1.
Warning on climate. UK not ready for heat, floods and disease. The UK is poorly prepared for the inevitable impact.
Speak faster.
No problem, Michael. I'll talk like this now. Say continue to...
It's really that simple. So there you go, just a bit of news there on RNIB in your pocket. All these features are available in full on our website. Check them out and check out the podcast as well. Tech Talk, you'll get us on iTunes, Audioboom, anywhere you get podcasts. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk or just Tech Talk and it will appear. Now, we love getting your contributions and we've got a lot of them this year. One in particular that I wanted to play you a bit of was Corey Brown's feature. You might remember this from earlier in the year. Corey got in touch with us. She's a Channel 4 announcer. And one thing she's always wanted to do as a partially sighted person is be able to use a watch, a particular smartwatch, for all the features that it brings. So she decided to buy herself an Apple Watch. Here's what she had to say on it.
I hadn't worn a watch for years, simply because I wasn't able to find a watch that I really liked and could actually read. I convinced myself, actually, that I didn't need one because my iPhone is never far away and I can always check the time on that. Then the Apple Watch came out and I was curious and I was excited, as I often am when new tech comes along. My current watch is the Apple Watch Sport Series 2 38mm. Now, let's be clear. It's not an iPhone on your wrist, so if that's what you're expecting, you will be disappointed. It is, however, a very powerful gadget. As you'd expect from Apple, it's fully accessible. Personally, I sometimes use VoiceOver and I sometimes use Zoom. 2147. I've forced my watch to use the Australian female VoiceOver voice because I find that easier to hear than the male British voice, especially in sort of louder spaces. Privacy, I feel, has never been an issue. The watch connects to Bluetooth devices, so you can use it with an earpiece or with headphones if you want to listen to VoiceOver that way. I use mine either with AirPods, although the connectivity can be a little bit sporadic at the moment. There's some fixing that Apple needs to do. So quite often I use a little Jabra Extreme that I've had for a very long time, and that can simultaneously handle the connection to my iPhone and to my watch very well. In terms of alerts, there's a lot of versatility. There's now a thing called theatre mode, which is in the latest watch release, and that means you can actually set the watch to make no noise, to keep the screen off at all times unless you actually tap it, and just send haptic alerts, which is where it kind of taps you on the wrist. So, what do I use my watch for? Well, obviously, time, telling the time. There's a choice of faces. High contrast, you can choose how detailed you want the display to be. There's a choice of analog and digital options. There's a large font for the digital display. There's a Mickey Mouse or a Minnie Mouse, so you literally have to just tap the screen.
It's 9:51.
And there's also haptic time, and that just reports the time back to you with haptic alerts on your wrist, so it just buzzes so nobody hears it, but you know what the time is. It's quite handy in meetings. Obviously, being a watch, it's great for timers and alarms. I don't tend to wear my watch in bed, but the haptic alert on the alarm can be really useful on days when I have to get up earlier than my husband, so then I don't have to wake him up with my alarm. I also use it for adding reminders. It's very handy for adding to the shopping list as well. Add fabric conditioner to my shopping list.
Okay, I've added it. Reminder, fabric conditioner.
And then when I come to do the shopping, I can literally pull the shopping list reminder up either on my phone or on my Apple Watch. I live in London, so the watch is great for checking out buses and tube times. I use the City Mapper app for that. Ironically, it is actually much easier to use the app on the watch than it is on the iPhone a lot of the time. With Apple Pay, I can pay for things in shops just using my watch. I also use it for checking Messenger, messages and mail, and sending quick responses if only a sentence or two is needed. It's handy for keeping on top of my email inbox because I can flag or delete messages from the watch too. Just press record, that's a really great note-taking app. Checking the latest news, checking the weather, looking at my calendar and scheduling appointments. Tracking move, activity and workouts. I especially love the fact that I can swim with my Apple Watch because the Series 2 is waterproof. If I'm quite tight for time, I can set it for 25 minutes and it will tap your wrist when you're halfway through, and it will tap you again at the end of that 25 minutes. If you're familiar with the Workflow app, you can use some workflows from the Apple Watch. I use that mainly to launch specific music playlists. And when I want to listen to Apple Music, I can control that from my watch. It needs the phone for the connection, but if I'm listening through a Bluetooth speaker or through Bluetooth headphones, I don't actually have to have my phone all that close. So that's really great for a day if you're just sort of getting jobs done around the house or even just relaxing in the bath. And you can save one playlist to the watch to listen to independently of the iPhone. For listening to podcasts, I use Overcast, which has a great watch controller. And you can even save podcasts onto the watch so you don't have to have your phone with you to listen to them. You can even play them through the watch speaker. I think that's the only app I know that you can do that with. You can also control the last thing that you were listening to on your phone from your watch. It's a basic stop-start, volume adjust, track next, previous track. But I do find that quite useful sometimes if I'm listening to something on, let's say, Audible or on Sonos. There are other apps that I use, although less frequently, but I think, to be honest, I've probably talked for long enough now. So yes, the Apple Watch is pricey. I feel it's money very well spent, and personally, I wouldn't be without mine.
Thanks, Corrie, and thank you for your contribution, and best of luck with your Apple Watch. I wonder if she's bought the new one yet. Now, Gordon Anthony got in touch with us with a problem, but also a solution. He had issues when he got his new Sky Q box. He's completely blind, and he thought, this is going to be a bit of a nightmare because it just wasn't as accessible as the previous Sky Plus system. Well, Gordon put his keyboard skills to use and sent an email that resulted in a rather unexpected response.
I recently upgraded from the excellent Sky Plus to Sky Q, which I found to be pretty awful from an accessibility point of view. In fact, I was so disappointed in how bad it was that I wrote a fairly lengthy letter to Sky to complain about it. Now, to give Sky their due, they took a little while to get back to me, but when they did, they have been very, very helpful. I have had several phone calls, and because I stay in Livingston, which is close to their Central Scotland Centre, they asked me to go down and speak to one of their training and feedback staff. So I went down and had a long chat with the guy, and he had a Sky Q box all set up with the remote control. And what I hadn't realised was that they have just done a rollout, and if you haven't got this version yet, it will be coming to you soon. My system was updated last week, apparently, that the speech instruction on the handset now does a lot more. So what you can do with your voice-controlled remote, there's a little button on the right-hand side near the top of the remote. You press that, you speak to the handset, and it will do things. To give you a flavour of what it can now do, which it couldn't do a week ago, you can tell it, for example, to change to BBC Two, or go to BBC Two, or simply say BBC Two, and it will change to that channel. If you happen to know the channel number that you want, you can say change to channel 102, and it will go to channel 102. You can say channel up, and it will then go to channel 103, and channel down takes you back to where you were, so you can scroll through the channels that way. You can tell it to pause, and it will pause the programme, and you can tell it to play, and it will resume playing. So there you are, guys. Hope that's helpful. If anybody's visually impaired and thinking of moving to Sky Q, it's not as bad as it was, and it is getting better. I still don't think it's as good as Sky Plus, but there's a lot of progress there, and they're investing quite a lot in having this speech facility so that you can give voice commands to your Sky Q box, and it's getting better. Enjoy your TV. Cheers.
Gordon Anthony there, talking about his experience with Sky Q, and not just Sky Q, but the experience with the staff and people who tried to help him and actually give him some rather interesting and positive solutions to his problem. Brilliant news. If you've got an issue with a product, then get in touch with the company. You never know. It might be just as good as that, an experience. And if it is, tell us about it. If it's not, tell us as well. We want to hear. Now, to another product and a big story of the year, of course. Apple launched its new iPhone X, the iPhone X, as some might call it. And it had a feature in it that kind of shocked, worried and concerned a few blind and partially sighted people. It was Face ID. But would that be accessible to us as blind people?
I was curious about it too. As someone who's congenitally blind and I have a kind of a congenital cataracts thing going on, so it can be quite hard for me to focus. And, you know, sometimes you go through automated processes and people think your eyes are closed when they're not. So I was concerned about this. So I reached out to Apple and they indicate that what you will do in the iPhone X is you can go into General and then double tap on Accessibility, and there's a raft of accessibility settings under there, and there will be a new option in iPhone X for Face ID. And when you go in there, one of the things that you can double tap to toggle off is the attention mode, which essentially says that when it's on, you have got to give your phone your attention, which they define by looking directly at it, staring the thing down, before it will do anything. You can turn that attention feature off, and more significantly, when you set up your iPhone X, people will be familiar, if they have iPhones now, about the way that you used to be asked to set up Touch ID, and you'd be asked to rest your finger on the sensor and release it, and it would take you through the process, and it was very voiceover accessible. So now you will have the same kind of process when you are setting up Face ID, when you're just setting up your iPhone X for the first time. It will ask you to turn your head. It will give you verbal descriptions about exactly what the iPhone X needs you to do. But the significant thing is that that process automatically detects that you are trying to complete it with VoiceOver running. And if it detects that, that you have VoiceOver on, then it will automatically disable that attention mode for you during the setup process on the assumption that you don't want it on.
So when it comes to unlocking the phone, you just need to have your head in the general direction of the phone?
I believe so. Now, how much in the general direction, I suspect we won't really know until we start using the thing in the wild. But you certainly don't need to be focusing on it and staring it down in the same way that a sighted person would.
Good advice from Jonathan Mosen there. Now, one thing we ask you to do a lot is stay safe while shopping online. But a lot of people don't know how to stay safe online. And what do you do? How do you know if the website you're going to is real? Well, we thought we'd put together a bit of a report for you on Tech Talk this year to help you along. And I think it's quite useful as we go into another round of sales, January sales. It's always quite useful to have this advice handy. Hope it helps.
We all agree that shopping online should be a stress-free experience. New research has shown that there remains an underlying fear of scams and fraud while shopping online. 70% of Brits do not know the key indicators of what makes a store safe to buy from. Aside from security fears, the research also highlighted the things which simply put a dampener for the online shopping experience, such as pop-up adverts, which add a huge frustration. Here to give us some tips on how to stay safe while shopping online is Fabrizio Fantini, co-founder of Expressly.
So the first thing is to have a reputable, trusted source when they refer you to a website. So you should be aware that Google and Facebook get paid for advertising, and they don't necessarily check the sites that they advertise on them. So referrals from sites where you're already buying something tend to be more trustworthy, or obviously from friends and family. The second one is when you visit a site or an app, make sure that it's what they're claiming to be. So things like a padlock on the navigation bar, a phone number that you can call, and customer reviews on the products, they're all indicators that these are trustworthy websites. And then the last point is look out for sites that do not offer refunds or do not offer terms and conditions that are amenable to what you would expect from them, because very often the challenge is with returns and refunds rather than the first purchase experience. So there's a few best practices that there should be followed by everybody. The first one is every time you buy on a new site and they offer you to save your data, you should enable the site to capture your registration information so that you don't have to type it over and over next time, because that actually makes it safer. Whether it's your email address or credit card details, they are best stored on the site server than retyped every single time. The second one is to make sure that when you go and buy from a new site, you do a little bit of research on them. And this may just involve reading the customer reviews or calling them on their phone number so that you can check who they are. And then the last piece of advice is just to make sure that you're having fun, because internet browsing can be also interesting and opening up new opportunities that you weren't even aware existed.
That was Fabrizio Fantini, co-founder of Expressly.
This is Tech Talk, looking back at some of the big stories of the year, but not only that, some of the most popular podcasts from the year as well. And we're delighted to say that you've been downloading in your droves the top two podcasts that were downloaded by you over 2017. Number two was NVDA Basics, looking at the how to get started with NVDA, the free screen reader. Our second most popular podcast from Sean Preece this year. But our first, our most popular podcast and most downloaded of 2017 was this. It was all about the first Braille smartwatch called the Dot. The Dot is a device that straps around the wrists like a watch, using magnets and a grid of pins to create four Braille characters at a time that change at adjustable speeds, allowing users to read text messages and use apps on any device via Bluetooth. Now, this kind of technology is not groundbreaking, but transferring it into a mobile device certainly is. Currently, computers using so-called active Braille technology can cost upwards of £1,500. At Incheon School for the Blind in Korea, pupils use Braille books and Braille-supported devices. Refreshable Braille displays help completely blind and partially sighted people to read at their own pace, but most visually impaired people cannot use these kinds of devices because they are so expensive and so bulky to carry around. That's why a device such as the Dot could make such a huge difference. Lee Ju Hui is one of the pupils at Incheon School for the Blind who tried it out.
We usually use the phone for voice calls. The watch is cool because it allows us to read data through Braille.
The creators of the Braille smartwatch, called The Dot, is a venture company started by four university students. Kim Yu-yun is the CEO of the company.
So it's like an Apple Watch or Pebble. It's a smartwatch, but it has a display with the Braille. So visually impaired people all over the world can communicate with the world in their hands.
There have been refreshable Braille displays on the market for some time now, but their size and weight make them awkward to transport around. The Dot is 1/20th of a standard refreshable Braille display, which means it can be carried around on the wrist with ease. The size was able to be reduced through a new type of actuator that represents the Braille cells. Sung Ki Kwang works for Dot and explains how they did it.
We've thought out the box. Why should actuators be on a ceramic substrate? We thought about experimenting with magnetic fields, as it can also generate various physical activities. Through a singular magnetic field, we were able to prevent clashes among pins. As a result, we came up with an active actuator that can represent 24 cells.
The reduced actuator not only meant that the size of the device could be reduced, the price could also be heavily reduced. The new Dot watch will cost 1/10 of the price of a current tactile display device. It goes onto the wrist like any watch, and along with its design, the device is sophisticated, unlike some of the other options out there. Juji Song also works for Dot.
The assistive devices for handicapped people are usually bulky and ugly. We want to make a device people can be proud of wearing. As the Braille watch needs to be touched, we paid close attention to the details, such as the height and the angular form of the display, so that the hand and finger can be more comfortable on it.
But what has led to these young, bright minds focusing on an innovation for the visually impaired rather than broader consumers? At school, the guys watched a blind friend struggle with bulky textbooks and equipment, and they learned how tough it was for people with poor sight to pursue learning. The CEO of Dot, Kim Yu-yun, explains.
I saw one blind woman, and then she used really big Braille books. Currently, there are there are the device, but on the market, the price range is $3,000 to $15,000. So only 5% of the visually impaired people can use that. So we really strongly felt that this is the thing that we gotta do, and that we can make something for killing their pains.
They didn't just share and nurture the idea, they decided to start a business to make a real product to help blind people. The team at DOT have worked with blind and partially sighted people to perfect the device through constant user-led feedback. Bong Yi-yong hopes it'll benefit people.
There is a limit to voice data. There are times when we need to check the text and data through Braille. The watch could be meaningful if it can fulfill the function.
Through just, you know, sharing their pains and then through brainstorming with them, we made DOT, and also we made a lot of other products for the future pipeline.
There you go. That was our most downloaded podcast of 2017, the first Braille smartwatch. Wasn't that incredible? Who'd have thought that would be the most downloaded? But there you go. It's amazing what floats your boats. Well, hopefully we'll make more content like that for you next year that will be just as interesting. Before we go, it's hard not to mention politics, if I'm honest, because Donald Trump has been everywhere on every program, and he even infiltrated our Tech Talk show in 2017. Even the Donald ended up on the show. Well, not actually him so much, but his spokesperson Kellyanne Conway, after she said this.
There was an article this week that talked about how you can surveil someone through their phones, through their certainly through their television sets, any number of different ways, and microwaves that turn into cameras, etc. So we know that that is just a fact of modern
sure.
life.
Yeah.
So based on that, we had a bit of fun and made this.
Door open. Door closed. 5 minutes. Start. Your food is now cooking. Now, you enjoy that nice chat with your friend on the phone. While I listen. Sorry. I mean cook your delicious food. Not listening. Cooking. Honest. Door open. Door closed. And I never heard a thing. Wink. Wink.
Well, let me just clarify something. Let me just tell you that microwaves don't listen to you. That was just a bit of fun. That is it for our show for 2017. Thank you so much for being with us over the year. Join us throughout 2018. We'll have Sean and Tim and Julie and Claire and Scott and everyone else who's taking part in the programme over the last year back with us again at some point. So do join us for that. You keep in touch as well. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. If you've got a device or something over the festive period you want to share with us, then we'd love to hear about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.